Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to another edition of CMC Radio. I'm your host, Rob May. Hope everyone's having a great week so far. It's Friday, 4:30 p.m. here on the East Coast in New York. We have a beautiful weekend ahead of us. Had a pretty nice string of weather so far. You know, nothing too crazy hot as we've experienced recently this past summer. So hopefully things will be cool, calm, and everyone's got some great plans for the weekend. And we're done with the work week, so here we go. And joining me back on the program for part 8 of the 12-part extended series is Linda Groff. Dr. Groff, welcome back to the show.
Hi, glad to be here.
All right, so Linda, not to take up too much time, today's topic is transcending violence and war with nonviolent action, right?
Right, yes, yeah.
Okay,
maybe
so
sort of an extension of the last topic, yeah.
Which was building cultures of peace on planet Earth, right. And so, I mean, obviously the general theme behind everything that this series is all about is creating a better world and future for ourselves and for future generations. And, you know, I know for my part, you know, I certainly want to make sure that we do the right thing by the, by the planet, by the environment, and do everything that we can to make, make this world last as long as we can. But now, that's what's so inspiring about talking with you is that, you know, all the different studies that you've done and everything that you've understood and you're learning. Take us into how today's topic is relevant to everything that we discussed in the past with the past topics as well.
Okay, well, we've done different topics before. We've done a couple futures topics, including how technology is driving change, and we have to, you know, look at how that's impacting our future world that we're creating. And we've looked also at intercultural communication and interreligious dialogue, interfaith dialogue, as how we need to find tools to deal with the diversity of humanity in positive ways and create more understanding in the world between all the different people who are now interacting with each other in an interdependent world, which is partly furthered by technology and interdependence. And then last time we talked about different evolving views of peace, find as if we could achieve these goals, we would create a more positive culture of peace or different cultures of peace on the planet and in our societies and the world. And so today the topic is nonviolence as the desired means to use to bring about needed social political. I think nonviolence is both a goal in itself as well as a desired means to use to bring about change. So as a goal, it's, we would like to create a more nonviolent world if we could, because right now we're in danger as a human species if we keep using violence with the technology that we have today. If we actually use it, you know, like I hate to say this, but there's one of our political candidates who's even talked about, well, why can't we use nuclear weapons? Like, he doesn't even understand that they're there for nuclear deterrence. But the point is just that we can't use the incredibly destructive technologies we have today to solve our problems unless we want to destroy the whole planet and ourselves in the process. You know, so we have to start evolving as a human species and figure out more nonviolent ways and more responsible and conscious ways to resolve our conflicts if we want to do that, you know, if we want a better world. So nonviolence is a really important topic, and it's a goal in itself, but it's also the desired means we want to use as opposed to violence to bring about needed social political change. So that's the topic for today. Yeah.
Well, and so getting right into it, Linda, I'm curious, you know, for your opinion on this. So can you tell us a time where society actually chose to go with a nonviolent route that was very effective, you know, that was effective in bringing about change? I mean, is there something inspirational that you can tell us? I mean, especially with the way that things are today, it's very crazy out there. I mean, people are worried about where they travel, you know, nowhere seems safe, and be violence everywhere. So what are some of the things or events that you can recall where you would say that nonviolence has actually brought about some sort of positive change?
Okay, well, I'm just going to get into that. Let me give a little introduction first. But there are people who have given their lives to be leaders of nonviolent movements like Mahatma Gandhi or Martin Luther King.
Sure.
I mean, those are all people that, and there's a range of other people that have been inspired by them that have also done the same. But the whole, I mean, there's two sort of schools of nonviolence, and then there's a third aspect of nonviolence that I was going to talk about too. So let me just give you that quick framework,
sure.
I'll get into all these people because, you know, the thing is, let me just say that the power of nonviolence is, there's a few things. You have to have a just issue on your side to use nonviolence, to be committed to it, and you have to be probably trained in how to use nonviolent methods to bring about change. But you're really appealing to the moral conscience of your opponent and world public opinion when you use nonviolence. And you're doing it not because you have superior military strength, but you're doing it because you have a just issue on your side. So that's what gives you power in the situation to bring about changes. You have a just issue, and you can appeal to the moral conscience of other people, including your opponents, quote-unquote, and world public opinion. And that's the power of nonviolence, because it's not because you have superior military strength, because it may be that who you're trying to change has the superior military strength. But there have been a number of nonviolent movements in the world that have been inspired. Going back to Gandhi is the first person to use collective nonviolence. And let me just say real quickly, there's a couple different schools about nonviolence. There's one that's generally called principled nonviolence, which is what Gandhi began. And then there's also strategic nonviolence. And this principled nonviolence, which I also call spiritually based nonviolence, is people who have led nonviolent movements based on believing in nonviolence as a whole philosophy of life. Like how you live your life every moment is as important as the goals you're trying to achieve. Because the thing that happens with violence is that you say, the goals I'm trying to achieve are so important that they justify any means to achieve them, including violence. So
right.
So that's where people get into trouble, because when you use violence, then you create violent reactions to the violence you've used. You know, so, but the difference with nonviolence is that you, I mean, there's a whole thing I'm going to get into, but you don't dehumanize your opponent with nonviolence, which is you know, an important thing. So anyway, yeah. So it's an interesting problem. And Gandhi had different stages he believed that you have to go through, and so on and so forth. So anyway, where are we here? Gandhi was the first person to use collective nonviolence to bring about change. And before that, you had a couple people. You had Tolstoy in Russia and Thoreau in the United States, who as individuals used nonviolence. But the first person who used collective nonviolence to create a whole movement for change was Mahatma Gandhi. So there's a lot of people since him who have gone back and been inspired by him. Their goals have been slightly different in each case, but the means they have used have been nonviolent means, and so they've gone through, you know, gone back to Gandhi to see what he did. Like Martin Luther King went to India to, you know, Gandhi inspired Martin Luther King, and then a lot of other later people also were inspired by Gandhi. So, you know, and Gandhi also had some stages he believed you have to go through in a nonviolent struggle. So if you want, I could kind of go through those.
Absolutely.
And then we'll talk after about strategic nonviolence, where you use nonviolence more as a temporary strategy or tactic, but you don't, it's not necessarily part of a whole philosophy of how you live your life every moment to moment, you know. And then there's other methods of nonviolence that have emerged since Gandhi of ways to bring about change within existing systems. So let me go back to Gandhi first, I guess, and go through the stages he supported, if that's okay.
Sure.
Because he's sort of the, I mean, he had a huge influence because he, you know, was the first one to use collective nonviolence, and then he inspired lots of people since then. So the point is also that we have choices. You know, we can be violent or we can be nonviolent, right? But, you know, if you have needed change in society and there's injustice and you want to create more justice, you can choose to use violence or nonviolence as the means to bring about that change. But the problem is when you use violence, then, you know, you're dehumanizing. This is another really important thing to me. If you use, one of the key things about nonviolence is you are not dehumanizing your opponent. with violence, you have to first go through a psychological process in your own head where you say you have to dehumanize that other person, and then that allows you to justify that it's okay to use violence against them, even kill them, whatever. You know, but you can't just do it without going through a psychological process of dehumanizing your opponent. And the thing about nonviolence that I think is kind of superior form of struggle, if you will, or change, is that you don't dehumanize your opponent. Try to appeal to the moral conscience of your opponent to say that you have a just issue and you're trying to get them to recognize that, and also to appeal to world public opinion to get them to also see that you have a just issue on your side, so that they will also support your movement. So that's a key difference, you know, in using violence or nonviolence that I think is important. So anyway, Gandhi had these stages. He felt that a nonviolent movement had to go through, and he felt that you had to exhaust each stage before you go on to the next one, so that, you know, and you would hopefully each stage would bring about the desired goal of getting your quote-unquote opponent to see that you had a just issue and that they would come around to seeing that and that you wouldn't have to go on to the next phase. But if that doesn't happen, then you go to the next phase. So he had, you know, about 5-6 stages basically that you could potentially go through. So, and the irony too is that sometimes people have committed their whole life to nonviolence as a philosophy of how you live your life. You know, Gandhi as well as Martin Luther King, they both ended up being assassinated. Which is an irony because they were themselves committed to nonviolence. But there are other nonviolence practitioners who brought about change that didn't happen to them. We'll get to that if we have time. But anyway, Gandhi's stages. The first one is you try to utilize your existing constitutional, whatever exists in the type of system you have that you're in, you try to work within that existing system to bring about change. And some systems, you know, if you have a democracy, there might be more channels or vehicles to bring about change than if you live, for example, in a more authoritarian system. But you first try to work within the system, and then only if that doesn't bring about any change, then the next stage is that you go to agitation stage, he called it, where you try to educate people about the issues involved. And then after that, the third stage is an ultimatum stage where you present demands to the existing government that they can either accept or reject, but you think these are just demands. And then if they don't accept those, it's called self-purification, where you prepare for direct action by making sure that your own motives are pure and that you're not just on like a big ego trip or something, you know, that you actually have just issues on your side. And, you know, you prepare the population for that. And then the fifth stage, if you have to get to that, is direct action, where you can do a number of different things too. But in that stage, you know, you do protests, boycotts, strikes, civil disobedience, etc. But the goal there is only to oppose what you consider to be unjust laws. You don't oppose laws that you think are just. Okay, so that's because this is where I think the power of a nonviolent movement comes from, that you're opposing unjust things, not just anything. And then if that doesn't work, then the very last stage is to set up a counter-government in exile, where you say that the existing government and people in charge of that are not willing to change at all. And you've tried various ways to get them to change, and if they haven't, you have to set up a counter-government. So those were stages Gandhi said to go through. But he felt you had to exhaust each stage before you go on to the next one. And, you know, and you have to really try to bring about change in each stage and again, appeal to the moral conscience of your opponent and world opinion to hopefully, you know, you don't have to get to that last stage.
Sure.
So those are some of the stages Gandhi talked about. And then the next thing would be some of the characteristics, some of which I've given, of Gandhi's view of nonviolence and why it's a better method to bring about change than violence, for example. So he also called his movement Satyagraha, 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 or truth force. And so one of the important things, he felt that the means that you use to bring about change are as important as the ends. Because with violence, you say, well, the ends are so important that I can use violence as a means, it doesn't matter. But with nonviolence, you say the means are just as important as the goals you're trying to achieve. Because you can undermine your ends by using violent means, you know, so that's the point. And then the second point is that you only oppose, as I said, unjust laws, not all laws. And your strength comes because you have a moral issue on your side. And you try to exhaust all the possibilities in each stage before you go on to the next. And you try to keep the conflict on a human level by appealing to the moral conscience, you know, of your opponent and world public opinion. And this is, as I said, the key thing. You don't dehumanize your opponent. You try to appeal to their moral conscience if you can, rather than dehumanizing them. So those are some of the characteristics. And it was also interesting. I got an opportunity in my life to meet one of the grandsons and granddaughters, both of Mahatma Gandhi. Ella Gandhi is a granddaughter, and she lives in South Africa, and she's been in their parliament. And then also there's another grandson of Mahatma Gandhi, and both of them said that when they grew up by their parents who were, Gandhi himself read, he was a devout Hindu, but he read scriptures of different world religions to his own kids growing up, and they in turn did that to their own kids, which are these two grandson, granddaughter that I have been able to meet in my life. So they kind of really, Gandhi did have, there's been all kinds of different views, things writing on Gandhi, like was he just a great political tactician or whatever, but he was also a spiritual person. And, and he believed in, he had a combination of various different things. So as a result, he's, been someone that a lot of people go back to and look to for ways to bring about change. So anyway, there have been a bunch of people that have followed in his tradition using spiritually or what people usually call principled nonviolence. So
right.
Some of the people in that tradition have included someone named Badshah Khan, who was a devout Muslim of Pashto origins in India. I mean, Gandhi's whole struggle, he started using nonviolence first in South Africa, where he experienced discrimination against him as an Indian. And then he organized people to protest against that. And then he later went back to India and ended up leading the whole movement in India for independence from the British Empire. And when he did that in India later, he Badshah Khan was somebody who also believed in, he was called the Frontier Gandhi, but he was, Gandhi was a Hindu and Badshah Khan was a Muslim. But they both were trying to bring about independence from Britain. And Badshah Khan, unfortunately, what happened in India is you ended up with the partition of India. So you got one group becoming Pakistan, one area where the Pashtuns also went, and including Badshah Khan, but they didn't get as many rights there as they wanted. And then you had the part that became more Hindu. So a whole huge populations exchanged, where they lived. It was quite a huge thing that happened there. And, people were going, people who were Hindus living in what later became Pakistan had went back to India, and people who were Muslims in what was later India went to what became Pakistan, and it was a huge exchange of people in a difficult situation. Then other people who followed in the tradition of Gandhi include Martin Luther King, who is a Christian Baptist minister and led the whole, U.S. civil rights struggle in a nonviolent way. And he later in his life was not just dealing with civil rights, but was talking about poverty and opposing the Vietnam War and received a Nobel Peace Prize. And he was eventually assassinated as well. But he gave a few really important speeches, like I Have a Dream speech is very important. Letter, his famous speech right before he died was amazing because he gave this speech. I've been to the mountaintop and I may not get there with you, but we'll get there as a people. But right after that, he was assassinated. So it's almost like he knew what was going to happen. It's kind of an amazing speech. Anyway, and then Cesar Chavez was a Christian who helped to organize the farm workers, and which led to the National Farm Workers Association. And their right to organize and demand better working conditions. So he was also inspired by Gandhi. And then Bishop Desmond Tutu in South Africa was an Anglican bishop and helped to lead the whole independence of South Africa and to the end the apartheid struggle. in apartheid, and then he later was a co-founder and chair of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission that helped to try to heal wounds between whites and blacks in South Africa. And so, you know, he's another very important person. And then there's a whole group of other what are called socially engaged Buddhists, also in the Gandhian tradition, that were inspired by Gandhi, who also have used nonviolence in different Asian countries, and all come from a Buddhist perspective, which is quite interesting too. And the first one I'll mention is Thich Nhat Hanh, who's a Zen Buddhist monk who's from Vietnam originally and later set up this Plum Village in France. But he's the first one who developed what's called socially engaged Buddhism. And the idea there was, you know, a lot of Buddhist-focused tradition that Thich Nhat Hanh started was to combine that focus on inner peace meditation with bringing about socially engaged Buddhism in the world to deal with social justice questions. And so Thich Nhat Hanh did that in Vietnam. And then he later, you know, he has a couple of famous books, Pieces, Every Step is One. But he, you know, followed in that tradition. And then the Dalai Lama, His Holiness the 14th Dalai Lama, also in Tibet, he had to flee from Tibet to Dharamsala in northern India in 1959 and set up a counter community of Tibetan Buddhists, and still is struggling with the Chinese government to be recognized, not for total independence, but for autonomy, the right of the Tibetan people. But the Chinese have gone into Tibet and taken over, you know, the whole country, and, you know, destroyed a lot of the monasteries and so on. So, you know, somehow one result of that is that Tibetan Buddhism has come to the world much more than it would have, but it's been a pretty disaster in terms of Tibet itself. And then another person was Maha Gosananda, who's a Cambodian Buddhist, using peace marches in Cambodia against the Khmer Rouge and their killing fields and so on. And I think he's now passed away, but he was called the Gandhi of Cambodia. He passed away in 2007, yeah. And, you know, there were these terrible violence in his country, and he was also nominated for Nobel Peace Prize. There's another person, Sulak Sivaraksa, who was not a monk. The other ones I mentioned are all Buddhist monks, but Sulak Sivaraksa is a socially engaged Buddhist from Thailand, and he's led movements for social political change there. And then another person is A.T. Aryaratne, who is from Sri Lanka, he set up a whole movement called Sarvodaya Shramadana Movement. But he's done a lot of self-help movements within Sri Lanka, where they had a lot of a civil war for a long time between the Tamil Tigers and the Sri Lankan government. So he's called the Gandhi of Sri Lanka and the Living Gandhi. And, you know, he was also nominated for a Nobel Peace Prize. And then there's also one woman in the group called Aung San Suu Kyi, who is from Myanmar, which was formerly Burma. And she, you know, was under house arrest for many years. She wasn't allowed to leave. Her own family was in England, and her father was killed by a military dictatorship in the country. And, you know, she became a symbol of independence for her country and justice and so on. And she's also a Nobel Peace Prize recipient. And she is, you know, finally the situation there has changed, and she has become head of this this National League for Democracy, and has also now head of her country. So anyway, the point is just that you have all these people who have developed methods of nonviolent social political change, so there's, you know, all these different people. And then another we mentioned. Yeah, there's another form of nonviolence besides Gandhi, which is, you know, using nonviolence as a principle nonviolence, but there's also strategic nonviolence for collective social political change. And there's the person who first brought about this was called Gene Sharp. He has various different books about nonviolence, but it's a strategic, not a permanent way of life method. And then there's another book by Peter Ackerman and Jack Duvall called Strategic called A Force More Powerful, A Century of Nonviolent Conflict, in which they looked at a number of cases of nonviolent action different people have used. And then, you know, since then, I don't know how much time we have, there's methods of bringing about change within existing systems. And, you know, I don't know if we have time to go through a couple of these. These are things that have come about since Gandhi's life. One is conflict resolution, management, and transformation. So people used to say, let's resolve conflict. And they said, no, let's try to manage it. We can't always resolve it. And then the third one is, well, how can we transform conflict situations over time? You know, when you can't do it immediately, try to transform how the parties view each other in the conflict so that maybe eventually it can be transformed. There's another thing called alternative dispute resolution, or ADR, which is how do you get parties to talk to each other and to negotiate directly with each other, or to have a third-party arbitrator resolve the conflict. Or mediation is where a third party listens, facilitates the parties talking to each other. But whether you get a resolution depends on, you know, whether the parties can agree with each other. And then I'm doing this really quickly, but there's also dialogue. There's a whole movement today to learn about how to dialogue as opposed to debate. So debate is, I say, you're wrong, I'm right. Dialogue is, I listen to you, we listen to each other, we try to create more understanding and move to a third position. There's also something called nonviolent communication of Marsha Rosenberg, time to go through those stages. And there's also inner peace. There's prayer and meditation and love and compassion to also try to bring about change. But how much time do we have? Yeah, a couple minutes here.
Just under about 3 minutes, 3.5 minutes.
Oh, we do. Okay. Well, so there's all these methods to bring about change within existing systems. Marshall Rosenberg's thing, which I don't know real well, but it's called nonviolent communication. And there's stages you go through. So there's a four-step process. He talks about the first observation is to just observe what is affecting one's well-being. And then the second stage is, how do you feel about this, what you're observing? And then the third one is how to state what are your needs, your unmet needs in the situation. And then the fourth one is to request what concrete actions do you need from the other person. So this is a thing about, you know, also learning to come from your heart, he says, or your giraffe, as opposed to your ego. And so that's a method to learn more about how to communicate with people. But there's been so many different methods, in other words, of nonviolent, principled nonviolence based on different spiritual traditions around the world, of people coming from different spiritual traditions, or people, you know, using strategic nonviolence as a method to bring about change, or all these different methods of working for change within existing systems. So all of them, you know, are based on nonviolence. And I don't know, do you have any questions about that? So there's whole movements of nonviolence that have occurred around the world and been inspired going back especially to Gandhi. So he's had a big impact on the world, huge impact. And
absolutely, that's great.
Yeah. And so, I mean, if we can, we should always try to bring about change in some nonviolent method within an existing system, or by somebody even having to go beyond an existing system. But it's always preferable if you can do it nonviolently than violently, because there's always consequences of violence. And as I said, the world today, we need to learn more nonviolence, right?
Of course.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So those are the main points about all this. Last time we talked about all these types of peace. And, you know, the first thing is to stop war and stop physical violence is the first aspect of how to create a more peaceful world. And then we talked about seven evolving aspects of peace, including, you know, setting up international institutions where you can dialogue and try to resolve problems, and then dealing with social justice questions and structural inequalities, and then the feminists dealing with the community and family and the local level, not just the larger level. And then we talked about the need for intercultural peace between the diversity of humanity, and then the need for peace with the earth and all the other species that are endangered today, and then also inner peace that we need to come from within ourselves and find peace within ourselves if we want peace in the world. So the main thing, too, is if you have war situations, then all your resources and energy is focused on the war effort, and all the other aspects of peace that I just went over tend to be ignored. And things
That's
like
right.
violence against women and all kinds of things increase. So, you know, overall, the importance of not having violence in war would be
right.
a great goal for humanity. We could do it. Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, Linda, I appreciate your time today. We unfortunately are out of time for today's episode, but we will be announcing by Monday, the very latest, actually even possibly tomorrow, the next show, part 9, which we're planning for next week sometime. And again, for everyone that's out there listening, please check out Linda's website, lindagroff.net. So that's LINDAGROFF.net. Linda, thanks so much for coming on today. We will have a. We look forward to having you back on. Have a great weekend. All right.
Great. You too. Thanks so much, everybody. Thanks. Bye.
All righty. Well, from everyone here at CMC Radio, this is Rob Macy. Thanks for listening so much. Have a great weekend, guys, and we'll see you soon.